Stephen Starr and Chris Burnett host Indie Media On Air on KPFK in Los Angeles. And next, they'll get into the details of what's been happening to people trying to protest.
In the last period, the FBI has been questioning political demonstrators across the country, in rare cases even subpoenaing them. In other words, what they're trying to do is forestall protest at the Republican National Convention, and this is cut across six states. They've interviewed dozens of people, and this includes past protesters and their friends and family.
Well, they say at least 40 or 50 people and perhaps many, many more, and they actually don't know. And what's unclear is the criteria for which they are actually doing these interviews.
But in one state, in Missouri, three young men subpoenaed in Missouri, all three of those people have taken part in past protests over American foreign policy and in planning meetings for convention demonstrations.
So this is all in relation to the DNC and the RNC.
So it's basically you get informed, they knock on your door, you are told that you are a target of a domestic terrorism investigation, and they will not tell you the why of it.
And I think it's clear what kind of message this is sending to people. It's a message like, as they say, a chilling effect on the expression of legitimate political activity. It seems that the American Civil Liberties Union in Colorado has been involved, and as well as a number of other people acting as representation for these people to prevent the kind of political digging that's going on.
It's funny. We all know about what preemptive war looks like in this country, and now it's about preemptive stopping people from participating in a protest before anything's happened. That in and of itself sets up a very difficult posture for people who want to go and express their constitutional rights in the face of a government that seems out of control in many ways.
Anna Noguera is going to be joining us today to talk about what's happening in New York City and with Indie Media. Anna, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are
Hi.
You?
Hi. I heard that there was a shutdown of an event on Saturday night.
Yeah, the police intimidation is happening across the country and right here in New York City as well. This past Saturday, the New York City video team had a benefit in a space, you know, that often throws very big parties for the Williamsburg crowd in Brooklyn. And we were just about to start, you know, we had already started with a big screening. We had packed the house, and people were coming in for the second round of DJs to dance till 4 a.m. And the health department, the fire department, the police department, even the tobacco and firearms department came in and with flashlights looking around all over the place. They spent about 45 minutes looking around the place and eventually found something that they called something related to architecture that they said was reason to shut the party down.
What was the film that was going to be screened?
Miami Model. It was screened, actually. It was screened earlier on at 7 p.m. But mm-hmm.
And they claimed that there is no sort of political reasons for shutting down this event.
Yeah, they said it had nothing to do with political affiliation. It was just safety. I think one of the things they cited was failure of the building manager to post something saying that drinking alcohol was harmful to pregnant women. The building manager says that he's been, you know, that he's been visited before, but never during event and has never had an event shut down there. So it's definitely the first for that space, even though they hold many parties all the time. That was not the first thing. Indie Media, as you know, has been working for months to find a space for a media convergence center during the convention, and we were just about to, we were minutes away from signing a contract with a building in Midtown when we got a call from the executive director saying that, you know, he got word that there were security issues and that he shouldn't rent from us. And when we pressed him, he said that he had been contacted by law enforcement. He didn't specify which law enforcement, and when we asked, he basically shut off and refused to answer any more questions. So we had to scramble at the very last minute to find another space. So they're definitely putting the pressure on, and I don't know if we were targeted specifically in that case, but it's possible that they're contacting many buildings in Midtown saying, you know, don't do anything out of the ordinary, and putting fear into people about what they're planning to do and who they're planning to help during the convention.
Have you been able to solve the Convergence Center problem? Do you have a space?
Yes, we were given a space, a very great space, a very big space in downtown Manhattan, and we are busy now trying to outfit it with computers, and we've had to place a rush order for internet access because we had such little time, so we had to pay a lot out of our pockets for that. But everything is in place, and we're meeting every night. The video team is meeting because they are planning to do a one-hour live broadcast out of Manhattan Neighborhood Network, broadcast to Free Speech TV and across the country every night during the convention. We're setting up a radio studio in this space that is going to host a 24/7 radio stream that will hopefully be picked up by many radio stations across the country, including Pacifica, I hope. And we are also, we're doing The Independent, which is the newspaper that works out of the New York City IMC and has published monthly and biweekly newspapers for the past 4 years, just came out with its largest print run ever, 200,000 copies.
Wow.
We've actually been doing a little research into that, and we found out that it's the first time, it's the largest print run of any grassroots newspaper for any specific event. And we have the whole city mobilizing to help us distribute it. It's very exciting. And we will be doing another one in a week and a half that will be 150,000 print run, and then hopefully another one during the convention of a similar size. So the print team is working really hard. The web team is updating the website regularly. Lots and lots of people are posting to the Newswire, and there's often heated debates on the wire about, strategies and tactics and permit issues, which are all hot topics in the city right now.
Anna, since the last time we talked, a lot has changed, and maybe you could give us an update on sort of the permit issue, the march issue, maybe some of the more of these examples of harassment by law enforcement, and what's going on the street.
Well, as many of you might know, United for Peace and Justice, and Not in Our Name, and many other groups and coalitions are planning for a major permitted rally and march, hopefully, on the 29th of August. They did get their permit to march past Madison Square Garden, so that right now is the only confirmed thing. A little while ago, there's been lots of battles back and forth between UFPJ and the police department about where protesters will go to after the march to rally. And the protest organizers have requested time and time again Central Park because it is the safest, most obvious place to gather such large numbers in one spot. Also, it'll be, the end of August, extremely hot and humid in New York City. It would be the most comfortable place. And the police department has basically refused so far to give them that location. They did offer the West Side Highway, and UFPJ initially agreed to that under certain conditions that the city would help them arrange for water and bathroom facilities and several other conditions that they said needed to be met if they were going to use the West Side Highway. As soon as they agreed to that, the police department basically refused to talk to them anymore about those conditions, and so United for Peace and Justice took back its acceptance of the West Side Highway in a press conference last Monday, and said that they would, under no circumstances, go to the West Side Highway, partly because it was dangerous, the city had not responded to any of their concerns, and their constituents across the country said, we're not going to go there, so, the New York Police Department has to figure something else out. So they reapplied for a permit for Central Park, and within 24 hours, that was refused as well. So right now, there is no rally site confirmed. There's a lot of pressure on the New York Police Department from everyone from, regular New Yorkers who support, the use of the park for these kinds of functions. That's what it's there for, in addition to just lounging around in the sun on a Sunday. It's there for the citizens to gather and voice their grievances. So everyday New Yorkers are behind UFPJ in this fight, and including, right-wing newspapers like the New York Post have written 3 editorials, I believe, supporting the protesters' right to use Central Park. Everybody in the city is behind this cause except for the New York Police Department, but we're hoping that they will come around and realize that it is the safest thing for everyone.
Even Rupert Murdoch's New York Post. That's almost
right.
Shocking in its implications.
I know.
Can I just ask you to tell our listeners where the what the exact address of the Convergence Center is? You know what the street address is?
Sure. The Independent Media Center is 220 Church Street. That is its daytime entrance. There is a nighttime entrance for those people who will be working 24/7. But those are details that can come later. In addition to the main Convergence space, we also have a gallery that has donated its space for us, which is only 4 blocks away. And right now we're busy setting it up to act as an info shop for the public about what independent media is, displaying some of Indie Media's best work, not only Indie Media, but independent media in general, Paper Tiger, Third World Newsreel, several publications and radio programs. We have iPods built into the wall that will have Pacifica Radio's convention coverage from conventions past dating back to the 30s, plus lots of indie media, audio reports. We'll have 5 monitors displaying indie media documentaries and footage from all over the place. Rick Rowley of Big Noise Films is going to be showing some of his footage from Iraq. He just recently returned, and also parts of Fourth World War. He's recently released documentary. Big Noise Films recently released documentary. We'll have photos from various indie media journalists on display on the walls and also for silent auction as a fundraiser. And it'll also be our registration space. So this is where it's for the first stop for anybody coming in to make media. You get to be inspired by past work, and then you register and get an ID issued to you where you can then go into the production center, the Independent Media Center on Church Street.
Hey, Anna. What you described earlier about the police not giving out permits yet, and in my experience and just being at many of these events, I mean, it's just setting up a recipe for disaster. If the protesters don't have anywhere to go and the police decide to use violence, they'll have they'll justify it in the mainstream press and, you know, and saying that the protesters never had a permit or whatever. What's going on the ground in terms of strategy, and how do people plan to deal with this? And maybe describe a little bit of the debate on what are those debates you described earlier on the Newswire?
The debates initially were about whether UFPJ should be using the West Side Highway or not, and I think a lot of people were relieved when they decided not to accept it. I think what's going to happen, you know, I think both groups are sort of jockeying for position right now, and something will probably be resolved before everyone gets to town. It's possible also that the protest organizers will file a suit, and as I said, you know, it's very likely that even the courts are on our side on this, and we'll settle something before everyone gets here. If not, it's also possible there are many, many different events planned in the city, hundreds of events planned in the city the week of, and it's not absolutely necessary that UFPJ organize its own rally. It's possible that you just march, and then, you know, there's a march route that takes people into a, you know, they can negotiate a way for people to disperse. I do not think it is in the city's interest to create chaos on the streets of, especially on this particular day. The pressure is on them, and I don't think they want to turn particularly ugly on this day. So I guess it all is still speculation, but we're all hoping that, you know, when it comes to it, something will be resolved.
It seems to me, if I may, that what UFPJ is doing with the support of probably the Second Circuit, if it gets that far, but basically what's going to happen is that they're in a standoff right now, and the city, particularly the mayor, who seems to be dead silent on this at great political expense, is going to be forced to free up the park. At least that would be my guess.
It's possible.
And there are a number of organizations who are actually urging people to do more of autonomous type actions and, random political protest and gatherings, et cetera. What is your sense of the number of people that are going to be showing up to New York?
From what I sense, it's going to be a lot of people. We're getting word from, you know, a friend of mine just recently came from San Francisco, and he was just out there, you know, hanging out with people who are not necessarily political in bars and whatnot, and he says there were many conversations about people who are coming out here who are not typically involved in at all in activism or politics. But Bush has outraged them so much. This is the one thing that they plan to do to contribute, is to show up and show how much opposition there is to this to Bush's agenda. So I think that more than the usual suspects are coming. I think a lot of people who are angry about the way the last election are coming, and that includes, obviously, the Democrats, which is half of this country. I think it's going to be gigantic, but, you know, groups are planning for marches and rallies of numbers of around 250,000. It could be around there. It could be more.
Can you give us some websites that people can visit for more information on if they were going to come to New York? How would they get information?
There are two main sites that are coordinating all the protest activities and housing and logistics. One of them is counterconvention.org. That's counterconvention.org. And the other is rncnotwelcome.org.
Also,
and for the Indy Media Center, if you're coming to make media and document the events, you can register and find out more at nycgrassrootsmedia.org.
And nyc.indymedia.org?
That's right.
And if people want to look at the web version of the Indy Media publication, where do they find that?
Right now you can find it on PDF format at nyc.indymedia.org. It's also posted, a great website for news and recent developments on all the things happening around the RNC is rncwatch.org, and they also have a link to the latest copy of The Independent. I hope to see you in New York City at the end of this month, and if you can't make it out, please support everything that's all the planning that's going on here by visiting those sites and seeing how you can contribute from afar.
That was Anna Nogueira from the New York Independent Media Center. She is gathered at a convergence center downtown on Church Street with hundreds of people preparing for what will be perhaps the biggest political rally on behalf of those of us who care the direction that this country is being taken right now in recent history.
The interviewers were Stephen Starr and Chris Burnett of Indy Media on Air. We'll be back with them again as they speak with radical lawyer Katya Komisarek, who has written a handbook for people protesting at the RNC. For Finger Lakes residents wanting to participate in the march next Sunday, August 29th, the world says no to the Bush agenda that was just discussed in the previous segment, buses have been chartered from Ithaca to New York City. The buses will leave Ithaca at 5 a.m. on Sunday and return late that night, but people who wish to stay in the city for additional events into the week may take the bus one way. Tickets are on sale at the ABC Cafe on Stewart in Ithaca near Buffalo, and at Autumn Leaves Used Books on the Ithaca Commons downtown. The suggested price is $35. For bus questions and info, contact bjl34@cornell.edu, bjl34@cornell.edu.
Billionaires for Bush.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
These have been tough times for most Americans. The economy has been in the toilet, and there's all this scary terrorism going on. But ordinary people have risen to the challenge and tightened their belts and paid more of the tax burden, while unions get busted and jobs outsourced and benefits cut. All so we billionaires could enjoy more wealth than ever before. Now, you're not going to hear it from Bill Gates or Kenneth Lay, but I want to take a moment to thank you all for your generosity and grace, for everything you've done just for us. And now I'm off to squander my obscenely large tax refund on another vacation home and my third yacht. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
On June 2, 1987, in the early morning, Katya Komisarek, a peace activist from the San Francisco Bay Area, walked through an unlocked gate at the Navstar satellite facility at the Vandenberg Air Force Base in Santa Barbara County, California. Leaving cookies and a bouquet of flowers for security guards, she went inside and, using a hammer, crowbar, and cordless electric drill, damaged panels of an IBM mainframe computer and a satellite dish which were components used as part of the U.S. nuclear first strike weapons system. Using a crowbar, she removed the computer's chipboards and danced on them. On the walls, she spray-painted Nuremberg, international law, and statements for disarmament. After being undetected for 2 hours, she left the base and hitchhiked to San Francisco. The next morning, she held a press conference at the federal building in San Francisco to explain her action, whereupon she was taken into custody by the FBI. She was charged with sabotage and destruction of government property. Katya, who represented herself and was assisted by co-counsel, was not allowed to mention words like nuclear missiles or first strike at her trial. The jury found her guilty of destruction of property on November 16, 1987, and she was sentenced to 5 years in prison. While in prison, she decided to study law and eventually earned a degree from the Harvard Law School. She now works with the Just Cause Legal Collective, providing legal support to other activists. She's just completed a new book called Beat the Heat, written especially as a handbook for people planning to demonstrate at the Republican convention. She spoke with Stephen Starr and Chris Burnett of Indie Media on Air.
Maybe we could just start off with a little bit of the background on Beat the Heat and maybe some of the work you're doing to help activists who might be going to the RNC in a couple of weeks.
Well, Beat the Heat is a book on how to handle arrests and searches. And it's got about a third of it is cartoon sequences that show ways that police manipulate people into giving up their rights and give you examples of how to bounce back, what to say precisely when the police stop you and are trying to question you and asking to search and so forth.
So I'm an activist, and I'm on the street marching, and all of a sudden I find myself, I'm peaceful marching down the street. I find myself surrounded by three NYPDs, and they're looking at me, and I'm kind of scared, and maybe they're asking me to step out and stand up against a wall. What do I do?
Well, the first thing you do is say, am I free to go? Because a lot of times the police don't really have the grounds to detain or arrest you, but they just stand in front of you in an intimidating way, and you think that you're not really free to go. And one thing leads to another, and eventually they're able to get evidence against you because of things you say or things you do. So the very first thing to do to extricate yourself is ask, am I free to go? And if the police officer says yes, then you can gracefully walk away. Sometimes, of course, the police officer will hedge and equivocate and say, well, we just want to find out what's going on, yada, yada. Now, if they're not giving you a clear answer when you say, am I free to go, that's a sign that they don't really have enough evidence. So again, you should repeat, am I free to go? And if the police officer says, well, okay, or, you know, what's your problem, buddy, then again, you should just walk away. It's important, by the way, to walk away rather than run, because if you run, that gives them grounds to stop you.
Okay, so let's assume that does happen to you and they do hold you and you're not free to go. What happens next?
Then it's critical to invoke your rights. And the rights we're talking about are the rights to remain silent and have a lawyer. And the easiest way to do that is to say, I'm going to remain silent. I would like to see a lawyer. And you want to say that nice and clearly so witnesses can hear you. And that's a signal to the police that you know your rights and that they can't question you any further. And this is important because otherwise you leave yourself open to the police picking away at you and trying to reduce your guard and use some of these old-fashioned yet still effective lines like, oh, you're not really a suspect. We're just trying to find out what's going on here. Or, what have you got to be afraid of? If you haven't done anything wrong, what's your problem with talking to us?
So it's really about how much information you're willing to allow. And you're talking about whether you're giving them unnecessary information?
Yeah, you're completely in control of what comes out like this. Even if you were arrested, even if you were in jail, you absolutely have the right not to say anything, and you should use it. Because the way most cases are lost is because of things that people say.
Katya, I've flipped through Beat the Heat, and one thing I've noticed is that there's so much information that you sometimes take for granted, and it seems it would be overwhelming that at the moment that you're faced with a situation like this that you're going to remember all of this. But having said that, there must be a place that people can get more information if they have a little pamphlet or something that they can carry with them.
The good news is I have managed, well, I've tried to boil my entire book down into 2 pages. I've just spent the last couple of weeks working on this 2-page leaflet that tells you exactly what your rights are. It's even got cartoons. And it should be available tomorrow or the next day. I'll put it on my website, which is www.lawcollective.org. That's lawcollective.org. And we'll be distributing it to all the major websites like United for Peace and Justice and RNC Not Welcome. So hopefully all the different organizations will get it and you can print it out. It's meant to be on 2 sides of 1 piece of paper. So
it sounds like a very, very useful document. Could we get a little specific about certain things that could happen above and beyond just being stopped and questioned?
Sure. And this leaflet is specific to law in New York.
Great. So this will be found on lawcollective.org starting tomorrow, perhaps?
Starting tomorrow. I'm just waiting for sign-offs from the sponsoring organizations and for the artists to finish the cartoons.
Great. Okay, so let's say that I'm on the street and there are several cops around and, they haven't let me go.
Right.
And they ask me if they can search my person.
And you say, I don't consent.
I don't consent.
Yeah, I recommend doing it in this formal fashion because that way the police can't pretend that they didn't understand. Sometimes people try to, trying to be polite, and because they're nervous, say something like, I'd rather you didn't, or I'm not happy with that, I'm not comfortable. And that's not a clear no. You need to be absolutely clear.
Just for our listeners tuning in, we're on the phone with Katya Komisarek, who is from the Just Cause Law Collective up in Oakland, and we're discussing, specific to the RNC, actually, because the answers we're getting from Katya have to do with how to deal with the police on the street in New York. Now, the vast 99.9% of the people going to New York are there to express their dissent and perhaps exercise their First Amendment rights. But because of the conflicting reports we're getting from New York in terms of how the city is dealing with the protesters, which at this point they haven't even given the protesters a formal place to gather, we expect that people really need to understand what their options are and behavior should be around a police force that may be dealing with many, many people in a more aggressive fashion than perhaps they should be. So getting back to the searches for a moment, once you say, I don't consent, what happens if they continue to pursue?
Well, it's not wise to resist physically because then they can beat you up and arrest you for battery on a police officer.
Just by resisting the act of them trying to search your person?
Yeah, and resistance needs to be entirely verbal. As soon as you start resisting physically, you'll get hurt and you'll get extra charges. Mm-hmm. It's generally not worth it. The important thing to remember, though, is there is frequently a lengthy stage when the police have you in custody in which they don't really have grounds to do more than a pat search, and they're seeking your permission to do more. Yeah, when I talk about a pat search, I mean the frisk. You've seen it where they put you up against the wall and they pat down your sides and up your legs and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's called a pat search or frisk. And when the police are doing that kind of search, they're only supposed to be feeling for weapons, like guns or knives. They're not supposed to put their hands into your pockets or your underwear or, get personal. The whole idea of the search is to protect them from weapons. So, having done this pat search, a lot of times, of course, the police don't find evidence of any crime. But then, because you're all intimidated, they turn you around and say, now, empty your pockets. And you, feeling totally demoralized and busted by then, frequently turn out your pockets or open your pack. But this is a terrible mistake, because this is your last best chance to walk away from trouble. If, when the police say, empty your pockets, you don't consent, you may be able to extricate yourself. Now, one of the things that's difficult is the police are going to claim that they asked you to empty your pockets or asked to look in your pack, but it never sounds like a polite request. It sounds like an informal order. So you, on top of dealing with all of this other anxiety, you have to look the police in the eye and say, are you ordering me to empty my pockets or asking me?
And there's a big difference between the two legally.
There's a big difference legally, but again, it won't, in practice, when the police tell you this, it sounds like, let's see what's in your pockets. You know, I want to see what's in your pack. And again, the police claim that, they're simply asking you, but it doesn't feel like that. It feels like an order. So you have to pull yourself together and say, are you just asking me to empty my pockets or are you ordering me? Now, again, the cop may not give you a clear answer. He may say, what's your problem? I just want to make sure you don't have anything illegal in there. Or, you know, we're asking people to cooperate with our efforts to combat terrorism. This is just a standard random search. What's the problem? And at that point, you still have to say, I don't consent. Because, see, you have the whole power in the situation. It's up, but the only way to get any good out of it is to say, I don't consent. They wouldn't be asking if they had the right to go in your pocket. You know?
And without a witness, but how are you going to be able to make the distinction between a command and a request?
Well, that's the beauty of the situation in New York. There should be like 100,000 other people around to be witnesses as long as you speak clearly and have some buddies with you.
So having securing witnesses to whatever's going on is a really good idea.
Well, you should. And whatever you're doing in New York, especially in these difficult times, you should have some friends with you. Mm-hmm.
Don't go out on the streets alone at night.
Yeah.
Katya, what's your response to the story that came out today on the FBI's sort of fishing expedition for finding quote-unquote violent people who will be traveling to the RNC? Are you familiar with that?
I am, and, you know, this is the sort of demonization of activists that's happened before every large-scale protest at the, you know, anti-globalization protest and the ones at the conventions, at the Democratic and Republican conventions last time around.
But so on a national scale, though, I don't think are you familiar with that?
I am, and my guess is that all it's going to not find people who they're genuinely looking for, but target good organizers and innocent activists and harass and intimidate. I think it's appalling,
right.
And it's certainly an escalation of government tactics to repress dissent.
Right. One of the headlines, I believe it's from your book, is it says, "Be careful what you sign in custody." What does that mean?
Well, there are a number of documents when you've been arrested that the police will, who are processing you, who are booking you, will shove in front of you and try to get your signature on, and most of them are traps. They will lead you to confess or make incriminating statements, the statements that can be used to prove that you're guilty. So if you're given a document that has your rights listed on it, you know, I have the right to remain silent, I have the right to an attorney, any document in custody with that on it is actually a waiver. They're trying to get you to say that you give up those rights. So don't sign anything in custody that has your rights listed on it. Don't sign a statement or make a statement in custody. And I would recommend against signing a property receipt, or in New York they call it a property voucher, because although your backpack and other property may have been taken from you when you were arrested, you have the right to get it back anyway. That is, it's got your arrest number listed on it. They put your stuff in an evidence bag, or at least they're supposed to. God knows how they're going to keep track of hundreds of thousands of backpacks that they take, but still. You have the right to get it back, but if you sign this property list, then anything that happens to be put in your backpack is you're acknowledging possession of. So if somebody put drugs in your backpack without your knowing it, you would have admitted possession.
Mm. So is there anything you can sign?
Yeah. There are two things that you can sign in New York, a summons or a desk appearance ticket, which they refer to as a DAT. And both of these are promises to come to court. And you'll know that it's a promise to come to court because it has a date and a time and a courthouse listed on it.
Okay, and so that's a summons and a desk appearance ticket.
Yeah, most people arrested in New York City will get a summons, okay. And it looks like a ticket. It is a kind of ticket. And one other reassuring thing about the summons is that right above the signature line, it says that this is not an admission of guilt.
Right. So again, to reiterate for the listeners, you know, do not sign a property document because who knows what they're going to stuff.
Well, do not sign anything except a summons.
I'm not saying that the cops are going to necessarily put drugs in your bag,
but it sets
up. Arrested with you could have.
Right. And let's move on to sort of a broader piece of this. So people, you know, in Los Angeles, there's a whole lot of people planning on going to New York for the RNC.
Right.
And it would be really good if you could, Katya, to give them an overview on what the headlines are around staying safe.
Oh. Well, one is to watch your body language, because as you can tell from the papers, the police are really hyped up at this point. They've been issued this 35-page document on how to handle the RNC. That nobody's seen yet, and a lot of them are going to be very nervous. So you have to behave around them in a particularly cautious way. For example, don't walk up behind a police officer, never touch them or their equipment or their cars, and be very careful about making sudden movements or running when you're near a cop, even if you're trying desperately to catch up with your friends who've gotten a block ahead. Keep a really big distance from cops. Other things to be conscious of are not carrying pocket knives and obviously not carrying illegal drugs, not only because it's illegal in itself, but if you got arrested for some, you know, just for demonstrating and you had a knife in your pocket, you might find it impossible to bail out. Along, you know, you'd be stuck. Certainly in New York during the RNC, I would behave just as if you were in an airport and not make any stupid jokes about blowing things up or, you know, violence or hurting people or damaging property. It's because you never know who's going to be listening. What else? When you're on the street, you shouldn't be carrying around your address book, phone list, planner, or journal, because if you got arrested, these items that have all these phone numbers and addresses in them could get confiscated, and you might end up getting other people in trouble. The same goes for your cell phone. If you have a lot of phone numbers stored in it, you might want to take them off for the time being, if you can.
And what's the issue about wearing face protection?
That's an interesting thing. New York has a law that they call the mask law. A number of states have this, and they were mostly implemented in the 1800s and they were directed at the Ku Klux Klan. Now, however, such laws are being used against activists, especially people in the Black Bloc, people who identify as anarchists and maybe covering their faces with bandanas. So, the bottom line is, if you wear a bandana over your face, even if it's to protect you against tear gas, you can be charged with violating the mask law. Now, there's a couple of wrinkles here. The mask law doesn't forbid you to wear a mask all the time, but you can't wear a mask in proximity to two other people wearing masks. That is to say, anytime there are three or more people in a public place wearing masks, any kind of mask, they're breaking this law. Now, it's not clear how close you have to be to other people wearing masks to be three people. I mean, 10 feet away, 50 feet away,
right.
You don't know.
In the same square mile?
Yeah.
I assume this doesn't apply to police officers.
No, they get to wear their helmets with their visors, and that doesn't count.
As do the ones who are going undercover as quote-unquote, you know, radicals.
Oh, the agents provocateurs. Yeah, that's their special case. So it's a really interesting area of law, and there are some legal arguments that could be made on behalf of wearing masks that have a clear political message, you know, like a mask of George Bush with dollar signs all over it or something like that. But if you're going to wear a mask in a desire to challenge the law because you want to litigate about it, you should work with a lawyer ahead of time, particularly the lawyer who's going to be helping you in court, and work out together with the lawyer a mask that's going to give you the most grounds for arguing your case in court. You need a mask that communicates a really clear, specific message. But frankly, it's not worth doing unless you're interested in that kind of litigation.
Well, I mean, the reason I ask is because of what happened in Miami. It was such a violent police state.
Right.
And, you know, people were just bombarded with high-tech weaponry, pepper spray bombs, you know, pepper spray itself, rubber bullets. I mean, people were just brutalized in Miami. And I think a lot of people are really nervous that kind of thing could happen in New York City.
Right. Well, something to think about is that if you are going to bring protection, especially from tear gas, if you bring a dampened bandana and carry it around in a baggie in your pocket, then if tear gas is shot, you can always hold it over your mouth yourself with your hand without tying it around your head.
You know, we should emphasize, these were peaceful protesters in Miami who were just attacked. You know, this isn't,
right.
You know, these weren't provocateurs. And in many cases, the agent provocateurs who were undercover often are the ones who started the ruckus and that gave the police an excuse.
Yeah.
So again, listeners can take a baggie and throw a wet bandana in it, stuff it in their pocket, and if they find themselves in the presence of tear gas or what have you, they can breathe through that.
Yeah. Other things that would be useful protection is you know those like $5 eye shields that you can get in a hardware store?
Sure.
That you use when you're sawing or using power tools? Those would, I believe, be safe. They would count more as glasses or protective eye gear. And those are important for protecting your eyes from these, quote, non-lethal projectiles, unquote.
Mm-hmm. Katya, you have a section called Reporting Police Misconduct. Maybe you can explain a little bit about that.
Well, a lot of us see terrible things happen on the street, like what you just described, and we're not sure how to report the police. And there's some things you can do about that in advance. The first thing to do, of course, is familiarize yourself with what types of evidence will be useful, how much detail. You really need a lot of detail to be a good witness in court. And on my website is a section on how to report police misconduct, and it's worth spending a couple of minutes browsing there so you know what to look for. When you're on the street and you see misconduct going on, of course it's great if you have recording devices or video cameras, but you can do an amazing amount with a cell phone, or for that matter, if you have a music player that you can dictate into. You know, you can talk a lot faster than you can write. Plus, while you're talking, you can still be using your eyes and seeing what's going on. So imagine yourself seeing somebody getting beaten up. Instead of just standing there, take out your cell phone and call your own voicemail, and then record the play-by-play right into your voicemail. So it would sound something like this. Hello, this is Katya Komisarek. It's August 30th, 2004, 6:52 p.m. I'm at the southwest corner of 7th Avenue at 28th Street in Manhattan. I'm about 15 feet from three cops, and they're beating a handcuffed man. The cops are all NYPD. They're all male. They're all white. One's about 6'2", 180 pounds. The other two are about 6 feet, 160, 170 pounds. The victim's African-American, male, medium height and build, early 20s, mid-length dreads, no facial hair, no glasses. He has, so you get into this degree of detail, which you can really spit out pretty quickly when you're talking. You have to give a play-by-play almost as if you were a sports announcer or an indie media journalist.
Yeah.
And what about an indie media journalist who has a camera and he or she might be in the presence of this? What is your advice as to how they conduct themselves around these kinds of these kinds of instances, and what do they do, for example, if the police try to take their camera away?
Well, the number one rule here is to try to stay out of grabbing range. Whether you're bearing witness and taking notes on your cell phone, or you're an indie media journalist or any kind of journalist, keep a prudent distance away, because an aggro, hyped-up cop may not differentiate between civilian witnesses and somebody he or she is trying to arrest. So there's no legal distance. That is to say, there's no established number of feet that you have to stay away. So if some cop says, you know, you have to stay 50 yards away or 50 feet away, that's garbage. You're entitled to stand as close as you need to see what and hear what's going on, as long as you're not interfering with the officer's quote-unquote work. So, obviously it's illegal and probably pretty silly to stick your nose right in what they're doing and start badgering them and saying, what are you doing, what's your badge number, and so forth. But if you stand 10 feet away or 15 feet away and take good notes, and you're not, you know, in firing range or what have you, you are legally entitled to do that.
Do you,
that you might want to keep in mind, though, especially if you're capturing sound or images onto an external medium, like if you have memory cards or mini discs in your camera or your recording device, it would make sense to be carrying around some padded envelopes with postage already on them, addressed to yourself. And then once you've taken a set of photos or gotten some sound recording, take out that cartridge, put it in the envelope, throw it in a mailbox, and move on to the next one. And that way, if your stuff does get grabbed, you'll have saved everything you've done up till then.
That's just a great note, and there are lots of blue postal boxes in New York City. And folks, we are on the phone with Katya Komisarek, who is of the Just Cause Law Collective up in Oakland, and she is giving us a real primer on what it means to exercise your constitutional rights and how to protect yourself during the RNC. There is a immense amount of information that we're hearing today, and if you want to know more or get more detail, you can certainly go to the lawcollective.org website. And actually, Katya has been wise enough to organize the information that she has in her book, Beat the Heat, into a very short 2-page document called Know Your Rights, Legal Information for Activists at the Republican National Convention. And that document will be available on that website tomorrow. So if you go to lawcollective.org, you can pick it up.
So, Katya, maybe it would be really helpful to comment on this material. I think a lot of people hearing this for the first time might be a little bit intimidated, the idea that you have to go through and know in detail all your rights to protect yourself. And obviously this is very important, but maybe make a comment about, you know, some of the history of why this stuff is important and maybe some examples of how it's helped people in the past, you know, at previous global justice movements, events, or et cetera.
Well, that's a big question. The material is actually not that complicated. All you have to remember is that if the police appear to be stopping you, if you're not absolutely sure you're in custody, you say, am I free to go? And unless they tell you, no, get back there, you walk away. And if it turns out that you're not free to go, that you are in custody, you say, I'm going to remain silent. I would like to see a lawyer. And that's all you say. You keep repeating that. And those are the two things that will make you as safe as possible.
Are you entitled to know the reason they're detaining you if they do not want you to go?
And if they tell you to shut up, can you keep asking them questions?
You can, but that's not productive, because when you ask questions or make remarks or answer questions, you're giving them material that they can use to actually arrest you. Frequently, when even if you're not free to go, you're not fully arrested. There's this period between being initially collared or stopped and being truly arrested that's called detention. And during the detention is when the police are looking for grounds to arrest you. And so things that you say and do, like acting nervous or saying things that give them reason to suspect you've been involved in some crime, all of that will give them grounds to arrest you. So your best bet is to be very calm, very dignified, and say, I'm going to remain silent. I would like to see a lawyer. It's a total conversation stopper for the cops, and it should be for you too. Because the only way for it to work is then after you say, I'm going to remain silent, you have to really remain silent.
Attorney Katya Komisarek, author of Beat the Heat, speaking with Stephen Starr and Chris Burnett of Indie Media on Air.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Critics say that when we consolidate the media into fewer and fewer hands, it threatens diversity. Nothing could be further from the truth. Every demographic has different consuming habits. With 500 channels, we'll have one shopping network for Elvis memorabilia and another for the dogs playing poker crowd. Something for everyone. In this spirit, we billionaires are buying up the airwaves. If you're on a road trip from Kennebunkport to Crawford, you can tune into Rush the whole trip down. Just think, the same country and soft rock stations everywhere you go. And what we leave off the dial, you're better off without, really. Aren't you glad someone's protecting you from polka music? You're welcome. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
A few events of interest coming up next week in Ithaca. Next Tuesday, August 24th, a life-size model of the separation wall being built by Israel to wall off the Palestinians will be displayed on the Ithaca Commons from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. There will be a table with information about the wall, the conflict, and how to get involved. Then, later that evening, from 7 to 9 p.m. at Autumn Leaves, the coordinators of the Stop the Wall Tour and Ithacans Grace Ritter and Beth Harris will speak about the wall, their recent time in the occupied Palestinian territories, and local and national efforts for a just peace. The event is free. That's Tuesday the 24th. For more info, contact Grace at riseup.net. Then next Friday, August 27th, voices of protest sound at the ABC Cafe on Stewart Avenue in Ithaca. Join Rev 1, Hank Roberts, John Simons, and Will Futterman, as well as touring acts Catherine Moon, The New Patriots, and Daddy, in an event timed to coincide with the week of the Republican National Convention. The event is a fundraiser for Bush Must Go, so they can provide scholarships for the trip to the RNC, as well as yard signs for those not able to otherwise afford them. A cover charge of $6 is being requested. For more info, contact www.bushmustgo.net or visit their office above Autumn Leaves Used Books on the Ithaca Commons. Thanks to Cliff Tasner, the Billionaires for Bush, and the LA Sound Posse for the billionaire moments used in tonight's show. You can send announcements or otherwise contact the program through our website on welcomeguests.org, and we love to hear from people. Our theme music on Welcome Guest is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thanks for listening.
You got a penthouse in the city and another home in the hills. You got a corner office on the 51st floor and you walk on a carpet made of $100 bills. Well, I look at you up there in your plush office chair and I wonder what is going through your brain. As you look outside your window, watch the people moving by below. You must be thinking about your capital gains. Now you look me in the eye and tell me exactly what it is you do. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that you make your money from the grueling work that other people do. While they're slaving away in fields and factories, you're sipping your coffee on Madison Avenue. Should I call you evil? Should I call you cruel? Did you just come from the right family? Schools. Tell me, what do you think of your life? Does it feed your soul? 'Cause the life you are making for us is spinning out of control. You tell me this is fair. You tell me that they'll get their share. You say that you worked hard to get there. But I'm asking if you see from that tinted window in the air how many people must be poor so you can be a billionaire. You say this is the way it has to be competitive in the economy. Poverty is a market incentive to keep people from being lazy. And I say to you, have you
you believe that shit they taught you in school? You must be crazy. Sometimes it makes me angry. Sometimes I like to cry. How many people been working all their lives for nothing? They'll be working until they die. Should I come? Did you just come from the right family and go to all the right schools? Tell me, what do you think of your life? Does it feed your soul? Cause the life you were making for us is spinning out of control. All over everything, and it's never enough to be careful what you buy when you're shopping. In a land known for democracy, it's amazing how it comes to be. Freedom is the choice between Coke and Pepsi. So don't tell us your free markets will satisfy our needs. Don't tell us that what's good for Monsanto is good for me. You rob us of our livelihoods and our grandmother's seeds. Your endless thirst for profit is a social disease. Should I call you?